Well, fair enough. If you have any questions, we'll be happy to do our best to handle them. In the meantime, you can send your questions to question@thenewgame.com. Okay, very good. So here we are. Welcome and thank you all. It's really, it's an honor and a privilege for us to be with you today. My name is Mitch Axelrod, and I'm going to be your host and your guide here through this conversation. Just to give you a quick little background on how this came about, I am celebrating my 30th year anniversary in business. I don't know if that's something to brag about or something to lament, but it is what it is. And so this year, I've decided that if you give me 30 minutes, I'm going to give you 30 years. And I kind of almost stole that. I guess you could say I heisted that little conversation from the largest and most listened to radio station in the nation. For those of you who live in the New York area, you probably heard the radio station WINS. And I think they've got the greatest unique selling proposition of any business I've ever heard. They say, give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the world. So over the next 6 months or so, I've decided that as part of the celebration for making it to the 30th year of Plateau, I'm going to spend as much time as I can over the next 6 months to a year sharing and giving back and introducing some very fascinating people that I've met over the years. So this is actually the very first conversation. This is the first time we're doing the Play the New Game. And so every day from here on out, Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, we're going to get on the phone and we're going to have a conversation. And that conversation is going to be about how do you manage and navigate through what I perceive to be, and I'm sure you perceive to be, a major seismic shift in the way that the game is being played. And so from where I sit, the game is changing radically. Whether it's the game of business, the game of money, or the game of life. And so today, I want to kick off this very special conversation with an old friend of mine, and he's a friend who I've known for a lot of years. He's not quite an old friend yet, but he is getting there, and today is Paul Hartunian's birthday. And because I don't want to embarrass him, I won't ask everybody to sing happy birthday to you.
Let's move this interview on here.
Let's move it right along. Who better than to celebrate the first show that I'm doing and also to celebrate your birthday, Paul, and also to help you raise some money for a very important and worthy charity and cause that's very close to your heart. I thought who better than to have my good friend Paul Hartunian to spend an hour with me, take a little walk down memory lane, and talk about things that are really relevant and meaningful and valuable, things that you might not ordinarily hear in a conversation. And that's really what the new game is all about. The new game is really all about giving you a sense of something new, something different, something that you haven't heard before, something that isn't the same old, same old. And so the game plan for this conversation is to help you to recognize that in the new game, old rules and old thinking won't work. You've got to embrace the new thinking. I call it no-box thinking. And so today we're going to spend some time talking about Paul, his history, his story, the things that he's done well. I'm going to interject a couple of strategies and tactics and ideas of my own. And so, Paul, happy birthday, and thanks so much for sharing it with me.
Thank you, my friend, for what's got to be now 20, 25 years. I really appreciate being with you. And one thing I think we should do is set up where we are, Mitch, to give people an idea of exactly what's going on, how we're doing this. Right now, Mitch is at my home. We both live in New Jersey, but I live about an hour from Mitch. He's in my home. I'm sitting in my office. Mitch is sitting in Mary's office. So we are, you know, 2 seconds from each other right now. So you can get a visual picture of where we are and what we're doing.
Yeah. And because we're both big dog lovers, the dogs are all around.
and you may hear...
They're wonderful. And so What I want to do is I really want to get into talking about some very important things that that you can share with us, Paul. When I sent out this email about this conversation, I referred to adaptability being one of the most important personal characteristics that we can develop. And in 1996, I recorded a series. I actually recorded three videos, the first of three of a series called Successabilities, 21 Life Skills for the 21st Century. And the very first one I recorded was about adaptability. And the reason I recorded adaptability first was because, you know, there's no correlation that they can prove to what makes for people to live to 100 years old. The one thing that they said that contributes most to longevity is adaptability. The ability to adapt and the ability to be flexible, the ability to see what's around you, and not get stuck in your own limited boxed in thinking. And so I kind of frame this conversation around what are some of the things that we can do, that we can share with everybody listening, that can help them to adapt to the new game of business, the new game of money, and the new game of life. And I really do want to talk more than just business and money, because as we sit here, I'm looking out the window, and I'm looking at a 25-acre home, a beautiful property here that Paul lives on. And I really feel it's relevant for you to take people a little bit down memory lane here. And how did you get to this place? Because when we met, you were literally living in an apartment, like, what, a one- or two-bedroom apartment?
Mm-hmm. It was a one-bedroom apartment, right.
A one-bedroom apartment. And so, Paul, let's kick off and let's talk about kind of how it is, what would you say would be the couple of things that would be most valuable for people to know about what's made for your personal success over the years?
There are a number of things that I can pinpoint that have been responsible for my success. The good news is everyone listening to this has the same opportunities. And by that, I want to dismiss right away that I was born with some rare genius ability, that only six people on the planet can do what I've done. All of that is nonsense. In fact, that's what a lot of people use as an excuse for not getting to where they want to be, or for not doing what they should be doing, or for not succeeding in the way that they and people around them think they should be succeeding. So that's the good news, everyone here, and I'm going to prove that to you. If you've ever heard me speak, you know that I'm a fanatic for proof and providing an abundance of proof. So one of the things that I can put my finger on that has been responsible for my success is that when I see something that is an opportunity, I strike immediately. I take action, and if you've been following my blog, you see I take abundant action. I don't just do one little thing, two little things. I take big action, and I take it right away. For example, it must have been 20 years ago when I went to a marketing seminar in Florida before I started speaking, before I was in the information business. I saw Ted Nicholas, and the name Ted Nicholas may be familiar to a lot of you. He was a legend in the marketing world, a brilliant copywriter and marketer. I saw him speaking at the seminar. So far, I wasn't impressed. He was a good speaker, but so were a lot of people. What did impress me, though, was at the end of his talk, people mobbed him, and they had credit cards in their hands, checks in their hands. I had never seen this before. What most people at that seminar did was leave saying, "Wow, did you see that? Wow, what's going on?" I left saying, "I got to figure out how that works." So within days, I figured out, and I called a lot of people, and I said, what happened up there? How did that whole thing work? How did he get on the stage? How did he get people to hold credit cards up like that? How did he do all this? And I found out the answer, and then I put it into action. So number one is spotting opportunity. Number two is taking action. And number three, and this is going to lead right into what you're going to be talking about, Mitch. And by the way, we did not rehearse anything before this. We didn't even talk about what we're going to be talking about now. But number three,
go ahead.
Number three is my ability to adapt. my ability to change with the market, my ability to change with what I see happening in the market. And right now, it's such an appropriate time to be talking about this, because in the last year, there have been enormous changes, not only in publicity, but in marketing. And we'll get to that in just a little bit. So those three things, I can say, every one of you has the ability to do. See opportunity, take action, and adapt to whatever is changing in the field that you're in.
Now, I want to riff off of that a little bit, because you've really hit upon a couple of really fundamental premises around the new game. And one of the fundamental premises that I've been speaking about, and I can't, as long as I've known you, Paul, you are one of the most action-oriented people I know. But there's a part of action. You know, everybody says take action, take action, take action. It's like, if I hear that one more time, I'm going to puke. I know we're supposed to take action, but what is it that holds us back from taking action? And one of the distinctions I make in the new game is that imperfect action beats perfect inaction every time. And so one of the things that I notice about you is that you are willing to take imperfect action, whereas I know from my own past history, I can tend to be a perfectionist. I can tend to wait until all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, all the timing is right. And the analogy I often use is, by the time I get pretty, looking to get on the train, looking good, the train has left the station. You know?
That's
and
good.
And here I am standing. I'm standing on the platform waiting, and I say, "Oh, another train will be along. It doesn't matter." All right. But the truth is that most of us, when we look back, we don't look back about with a sense of upset about the things that we did, even if they didn't work out. We tend to look back over the things that we didn't do, that we know we could have done, but either we cling to the known or we fear the unknown. So let's go beyond the idea of, you know, just take action. What is your mindset when you're taking action? And
yeah,
is there something that goes off in your head that says, okay, it's time to take action, and take us through that a little bit?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that, because you brought up a perfect point. How many times can you hear people say, take action, take massive action, you got to act on it right away? And it's very hollow. Excuse me, and I was hoping you were going to follow up with that. I'm able to take action because I'm also able to clearly picture the end result that I have in mind. And again, everyone listening can do this. All of you on the line, well, maybe not all of you, because I know a lot of you are Mitch's people, and you may not be aware that my real passion in life, probably the biggest passion I have, is doing dog rescue work. I am clearly able to see that if I am able to raise X number of dollars, I am able to have surgery done on this number of dogs. If I'm able to raise X number of dollars, I'm able to donate money to this group that needs X number of dollars. I am able to clearly see the whatever endpoint I'm pointed at. Mitch, I'm so glad that you came up to my home today to do this interview, because now you see where I live and you see what I'm able to walk out to every day of my life now. I was clearly able to see that. Was I able to see this house and my pond and the pool and everything? Well, no, I wasn't able to see that. And I think that's where imagery fails people, because they say, imagine your perfect mate. Well, if I'm imagining a redheaded, tall woman who's thin and is 31 years old, I've kind of locked myself in. I didn't imagine that. But what I did imagine was a big property with woods and a pond and a beautiful home. I didn't define the home, but I was able to feel what I wanted to feel in this home, which is comfortable, which is prosperous. I'm able to clearly see that this dog needs this cancer surgery now, and it's going to cost $7,000. So when I take action, it's tied to the end result. Did that help at all?
Yeah, and there's a couple of things you said that really, really triggered some thoughts for me. First of all, you have a very big why, W-H-Y. In other words, you really have something outside of yourself, beyond, you know, just self, more stuff for yourself. You have the dogs. You love the dogs. They're a passion for you. And so that's a really critical thing. I find that, and I'm guilty of this too, one of the principles in the new game of business, when I wrote the book, The New Game of Business, in 2003, one of the chapters in the book was don't fall in love with your products and services. Fall in love with serving people. Mm-hmm. Because you can get blinded by your products and services. And you can start talking all day about your products and services. And frankly, people don't really care so much. But I noticed that whenever I have a conversation with you, and it's true for me too, because I come from a serving perspective, that the conversation almost never comes back to products and services. It always comes back to how can I serve, who can I help, and so what you said a few minutes ago is really important, and I want to riff a little further on that, because over the past year and a half, the big movement that's taken the world by storm comes from the book The Secret.
Mm-hmm.
And The Secret, which I have some real big issues with, but I won't get into those today. But what I do want to talk about is how do we distinguish between just visualizing something with intention and actually manifesting something in terms of outcome? Okay, so because what you said was not only is it important for you to have the intention and the visualization, but it's critical to work backwards from the outcome. And so I'm going to come back to you in a second, but I want to give everybody a formula because I'm big on formulas. And this formula speaks directly to what you talked about a minute ago, about visualizing the outcome and then working backwards from the outcome. And I'm actually going to give you this formula. You can download it off my website. I'm giving it to you at no charge. You can download this at thenewgame.com/RAMM, R-A-M-M dot PDF. thenewgame.com/RAMM, R-A-M-M dot PDF. And I'm going to take you through it real quick. And then, Paul, I want you to comment on this because I found this to be the perfect navigational tool. R stands for result. Whenever I speak to somebody, after we get through exchanging pleasantries, the single thing I want to know, most important of all, is what result are you looking to accomplish? What is your destination? What is your outcome? And that speaks directly to what you were talking about before, that you know if you need $7,000, very specific, not I need a few bucks. You need $7,000 to get that dog in operation. That's measurable. That's tangible. R stands for your result. A stands for action. If you want to get to a destination, you must take action, and it's much better. You can't get to the destination, no matter how good the pilot is, no matter how good the flight plan is, if you don't get the jumbo jet off the ground. And so after you decide your result, A stands for action. M stands for measure. Measure whether you're on or off course. So look at where you are right now. Look at the result you're trying to produce right now. Look at the actions that you're taking right now. Are they getting you closer to or farther away from your destination? One of the strange quirks that we humans have is that for some reason we will continue to barrel down the highway of life even long after we've missed our exit. And that takes on special meaning here in New Jersey, believe me. So M is for measure. Are you even on the right course? Are your actions getting closer or farther away? And that's a black and white measure, by the way. Your actions are either getting closer to where you want to be or they're pushing you off course. It takes a lot of personal courage and character to say, I'm off course, all right? And I've had to go through this myself. In 30 years, I've been off course more than I've been on course. But it's the fourth step in this RAM process that ultimately helps me to get where I want to go, and that is to modify. That is to change. That is the willingness to be flexible and adaptable. So if you pick your result, you look at your actions, you measure your actions against your result, and then you modify. You may not get to your destination because there's no guarantee of anybody getting anywhere, but you stand a whole lot better chance if you see that you're off course and then you make the in-course corrections. You know, it only takes 1 degree off course for a pilot going from New York to L.A. to wind up in the Pacific Ocean. So if you're just 1 degree off course and you don't make that in-course correction because you're either stubborn or you're inflexible or you feel like, okay, it'll work out in the end, you're actually denying and depriving yourself. So I recommend that you use this RAM formula. It's a phenomenal formula. It's your navigational tool to get you where you want to go. And I'll give you another little clue. For those of you who know me, obviously we've been through this, but for those of you who've never met me, this tool is one of the greatest ways to qualify a prospective buyer as to whether or not they're really serious about getting where they want to go. And I've had people literally make $500,000 just using this RAND formula. Again, away from the old thinking of let's talk about my products and services. Instead, let's talk about your destination. Because at the end of the day, whatever you sell, your products, my products, Paul's products, they're only the transportation to get you to the destination. And I like to say that you're in the transportation business. That's what I used to tell people when they asked me when I didn't want to tell them I was in the financial services back in 1978. I said, I'm in the transportation business. I help people get from point A to point B financially. Where would you like to go today? All right? So I encourage you to use that formula. Now, let's bring this back to this whole outcome-driven conversation. All right? When you made the transition, Paul, you were early in your career, you were a professor. You taught at Montclair University.
Right.
Right? And then when we met, I guess around 93 or so, and then you came and spoke at a seminar that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And you gave a talk which just brought the house down on publicity. And this was in 1994. And we recorded that video. And it seemed like that was a real big turning point for you, in terms of you were beginning to emerge as a real force in marketing. I would like you to tell everybody, because I think it's a phenomenal story, what you did with not just that video, but how you parlayed that one-hour video into, I don't know how much money you made, but you probably made a lot, and all the other things that you did around that. Would you share a little bit about that?
You know, I think that's a great point to bring up, and I'm glad you put a date on that, 1994, because now that frames things date-wise in my mind. I will get to that. I just want to address one point that you brought up. That is a great formula, that RAM formula. Hopefully everybody's going to use it because I think that's brilliant. If I now give you an example, it'll tie in what we had been talking about. For you folks who've been... If you've been following my writings and my blog, if you're one of my subscribers to my newsletter or my e-zine, you know I've mentioned this quite a number of times. This, I think, is going to go right along with what Mitch was telling you. In my personal life, I have very strong spiritual beliefs. I didn't say religious beliefs. I said spiritual beliefs. So I know that ultimately I'm going to have that conversation with God. And if you read just probably 2 weeks ago in my e-zine, I mentioned this. When I had that conversation and he said, what did you do with the time I gave you on earth? I am going to want to take credit for a lot of your success. A lot of you folks listening, if you're my members, you're my publicity students, I'm going to want to say, look, I helped that person become successful, that person, that person, that person. I saved the lives of thousands of dogs. I taught people to be great teachers. This is what I did with my life. And he's also going to say, well, what happens when things were changing along the way? And I will be able to say confidently, I stayed on top of my game because I noticed things were changing and I did adapt and I made the changes. And we're going to talk about some adaptations too that I had referred to earlier, some very current things. So that's what I did. I know that ultimately my goal is going to be that end conversation I have. So how can I be able to confidently say I did great things on earth? Well, do great things on earth. Go in with exactly what Mitch said, not the buy my products, with the how can I help you become successful and therefore take some credit for it. Is that an ego thing? You bet it is. Mother Teresa did what she did because of ego, and she admitted that right up front. I'm feeding my ego because of this. I'm doing great things because I feel good and I want to get great rewards. And I also saw the same thing with the dogs. This was going to lead me to my end goal, which was justifying my time on Earth. Now, as far as what the question Mitch just asked, what happened in 1994, I guess then it was 1993 or sometime in 94 that I went to that seminar in Florida and I saw Ted Nicholas speak. And I said, I got to learn what happened here. I did learn what happened. And then I sent out letters to seminar promoters, and Mitch being one of them. And I said, I've got a story to tell on how I made a tremendous amount of money in a very short amount of time. I'd like to tell this to your people, your seminar attendees. And I did. Mitch was the first professional speaking engagement that I ever had in this whole publicity thing. Going back to what I had said earlier, I saw the response to my talk, and I said, I got it. I understand how this works. Now let's take action and fine-tune this. At that time, if I recall correctly, Mitch, the only thing I had to sell was a little skinny manual that I had kind of put together very quickly. I said, this is how it works. I've got to put a product together very quickly. My first publicity kit was put together. I then sent out the letters again to the seminar promoters. And if I recall correctly, there were about 22, 24 promoters. And I said, I want to tell this story to your people. Out of a 22 or 24 promoters, I think I got 11 speaking engagements. And it was a simple one-page letter. No great copywriting. I simply want to tell my story, and I have a publicity kit that I'm going to make available to your people. That probably 2 or 3 weeks later, I think I flew to Chicago. In 90 minutes, I think my sales were $40,000, and this was in 1994, which is a tremendous amount of money then, and even now. I knew I then understood how this whole thing worked, and I kept fine-tuning it and fine-tuning it and fine-tuning it. Things stayed the same, relatively the same, for 94, 12 years. That brings us up to 2006. In 2006, I noticed things were changing. Things were changing in the speaking business. Things were changing in the marketing business. And I had to stay on top of the changes. And then in the publicity business, in February of 2007, there was a 180-degree turnaround in how you get publicity. Again, if you're one of my subscribers, you know what I'm going to be talking about now. If you're not, in February 2007, there was one event that changed the way society operates. We used to be in what's called a credential society, which meant if you wanted to do business with somebody, you check their credentials. Where did you go to school? Do you have licenses? How good are you at what you do? And all this other stuff. That's a credential society. As of February 2007, we are no longer in a credential society. We are now in a celebrity-obsessed society. So sadly, but truthfully, it's almost irrelevant what your credentials are. If you are in a field where you've got to be licensed, obviously you have to have a license. But the people who are not adapting still believe that if they get better and better at whatever their skill is supposed to be, they will be entitled to a greater share of the business. That is no longer true, and probably for the rest of our lives will never be true again. Instead, the person who makes himself or herself a celebrity is going to get the lion's share of the business, regardless of their credentials. Sad, but true. What was this event that happened in February of 2007? Anna Nicole Smith died. You may say, this is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but it's absolutely true.
It is, because in February of 2007, the death of Anna Nicole Smith was the third hottest news story of all the news stories in February all around the world. The death, and I say this not sarcastically or cynically, but just very factfully, the death of a woman totally devoid of any talents whatsoever was the third hottest news story in the world. That was confirmation that we had now switched. I became aware of that, adapted very quickly. So the moral of the story here for you folks listening, if you don't understand the major adaptation that has happened in our lives, that we are now in a celebrity-obsessed society, and if you don't make yourself a celebrity, which actually is very easy, for those of you who are my subscribers, you know it's easy, you will lose. Because your competitors, who are not as good as you are at whatever it is you're doing, will understand that. They will make themselves celebrities. You will lose.
Well, you know, first of all, for those of you who've just joined us, we're talking to Paul Hartinian. This is Mitch Axelrod, and this is the first conversation that I've been playing in the game. And what you just said, Paul, has been something that's really eaten at me since we recorded that conversation over lunch back in, 1995, that was part of your publicity kit. And a couple of things that you've said I want to, again, hitchhike off of. And I want to come back to this celebrity thing because I'm really torn myself. I'm a very private person. I don't have any desire to be a celebrity. I actually kind of have a distaste for the way the media descends on people. And yet I also acknowledge that this is what is. And one of the things I've always admired about you is that you accept what is for what is. You don't try to rearrange the world to be as you think it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a, it sounds like a simple distinction, yet it is such a profound difference in the way that you operate in the world. And coming from the other side, coming from a very idealistic perspective, which is kind of who I am, always looking at the world saying, oh, it shouldn't be this way. But the truth is, you're right. We've become a celebrity society. Now, in probably other conversations, we're going to talk about the value of celebrity as a moral question, and that's not for today. But from a positioning perspective, from a marketing perspective, how does this affect the small business owner? For people who are authors, obviously, for people who have a product or service that they want to sell on television, or people who want to become a known expert, or people who crave the 15 minutes of fame, that's a no-brainer. But how about for the rest of us? Mm-hmm. How does this change not only affect us, but how do we, if we're not driven to be a celebrity, or we don't feel as though we have the expertise or the interest, how do we still manage to navigate our way through this really dramatically changing world?
You said so many poignant things in that last minute or so that I've got to address. First, you said you're a very private person. You don't want to be a celebrity. In fact, you really detest the whole media thing and the celebrity nonsense and all. And in all the years that we've known each other, you know that I'm the same way. I'm a very private person. I don't like being in the spotlight. Now, people may say, but Paul, I see you on stage. I mean, you're a great performer. You're a great speaker. Okay, but I'm looking at the end goal again. Keep that in mind. I'm not on stage for my ego, because I like performing, because I like anything else. I have the end point in mind. You also mentioned the word idealism, and that is where so many people get their foot caught in the bear trap, especially women. Women fall victim to idealistic viewpoints, idealistic dreams, idealism in general. So they suffer because of that, both men and women, but women more than men. They get an idealistic view of how things should be, and they run their lives, they run their business in that direction, in the idealistic direction, instead of in the what is direction. I hate this idea of celebrity. Paris Hilton gives me the shivers. I cannot think of a more reprehensible human being than Paris Hilton, if we ignore criminals, of course. But Paris Hilton, what does this woman offer society? But that is what I want it to be. What is the fact that no one on this planet can draw the attention of the media better than Paris Hilton. So if I understand that and I draw the attention of the media, or I draw the attention of my audience, the end result will be I make a lot of money that I can now do what I want with. So, again, I will talk about my subscribers because you have already heard this. I have already dedicated over $2 million of my personal money to the dog rescue work. I recently have dedicated another $5 million to the dog rescue work. That's what I do with the money. Do I have a nice life? Yes, I do. And Mitch, I'm not going to mention a name, but you and I know one marketer who drips in jewelry. How this guy walks is beyond me. He constantly talks about his homes, his jewelry, his money, his cars. He never has talked about his purpose on earth. I'm sitting here in my jeans and a sweatshirt, and you're pretty casual also, because we're dealing with what we want the end game to be. That doesn't mean that every dollar that you make has to be dedicated to social welfare. By social welfare, I mean everything, dogs, animals, people, whatever. I did take out a good amount of money. I live in a beautiful home. I live a comfortable life. But I don't live that excess because I know that there's a bigger reason for me being here. There's a bigger reason for every one of you listening to this for being on this earth. You're great at something. Even if you're great at planting tulip bulbs, that's your purpose, to get the idea out that gardening with tulip bulbs can help your blood pressure, can make you feel better. That's your mission in life. Your mission in life is not to sell your products. That's the vehicle to fulfill your mission. Selling my products, speaking, doing teleseminars, earning money that way is the vehicle that I use to reach the end goal of what my mission is. So I keep talking about what's at the end of the road. How do I get to the end of the road? And what's the straightest, shortest road to getting there? For me, it's going to seminars, speaking for 90 minutes, selling my publicity kit, which is going to help a lot of people, so there's part of my goal being achieved, and earning a lot of money that I'm able to channel into these social welfare projects that I support. Did that answer that? Oh,
beautiful.
But you know, I think I missed the key point of your question. How does it affect the small business owners?
Yeah,
you were talking about authors and the people who, for a whole variety of reasons, do want to be in the spotlight, either because that's what the job or the service or the practice requires, or for ego reasons, and there's nothing wrong with ego reasons. It's a lot of fun to be in the spotlight. What everyone listening has to stop thinking is that whatever you do is not celebrity worthy. And if you're hearing dogs bark in the background, it's no surprise there are a lot of dogs here. You can be a grocer, you can be a carpenter, you can be a plumber, you can be an auto mechanic. Look at TV. The last one I mentioned was auto mechanic. How many of you ever listened to Car Talk, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers on NPR Radio? These guys are mechanics. Are these the best mechanics in the country or the world? Certainly not. If you listen to Car Talk, you hear how often they're wrong. But they understood clearly the value of making themselves celebrities. How many times have you folks watched TV and you watch the evening news and there's a 3-minute segment every Friday and a grocer comes on? He just owns a grocery store. That's all. And he talks about how to make great summer salads or how to have a great graduation party or whatever else it is. He has turned himself into the celebrity grocer. Celebrity mechanic, celebrity carpet cleaner, all these home makeover shows. You see celebrity contractors. You see celebrity real estate agents. I cannot imagine a field, a business, a professional practice, whatever, that cannot turn into celebrity status for you. If you think that you can't turn yourself into a celebrity, you've now set up one of the biggest barriers to your success, and a barrier that you will not be able to get over until you stop saying, my field does not lend itself to being a celebrity. Yes, it does.
You know, it's interesting how loaded words can be. You know, the idea of a word like celebrity, it is a loaded word.
It is.
And when we think, it's a very loaded word. And when you think of celebrity, usually you get an instant image in your mind. And if it's a positive image, you say, boy, that's something I could really be. If it's not a positive image, our natural psyche will reject it. And either way you look at it, we're judging it. So let me take a swing at this, because I think you have actually just helped me with something. And that is that when you talk about celebrity, you can talk about being like a known go-to person. And so even if you're talking about celebrity as if you're being celebrated for something, as opposed to a celebrity, you know, the noun of a being a celebrity, but you look at it as a verb, you know, I want to be celebrated. Who does not want to be celebrated in whatever industry you're in, to be known as a person who at the very least is a great service provider, somebody who's passionate about their work, somebody who appreciates the value that they bring? And it's interesting, there's this video going around, a friend of mine, Alan actually, he's on the call, he sent it to me, about this young kid in a grocery store who was like 19 years old, and he was a bagger in a grocery store. And you talk about, you know, everybody can add value. And what he did was he actually went home and he asked his father, how can I add value? I want to start to create some a better experience for people when they come check out at my bagging line. And what he did was he started to write inspirational notes on paper and cut them up into little slivers, and he would drop an inspirational note inside of everybody's grocery bag when they left. Now, you talk about, you know, you're talking about a 19-year-old kid, probably, you know, not a college-educated student. Well, long and the short of it is that the manager of the grocery store noticed the sales went up like 200% in a month. Not only did the sales go up 200%, but he noticed that when people were checking out of the store, the line for this young fellow's checkout counter was 3 or 4 times as long as everybody else's line. And when the manager walked up to the people and he said, you know, there's a shorter line over there, you can check out quicker, nobody left this guy's line. Why? Because they all wanted to get his inspirational message. One woman said, every single time I walk by that store now, I stop in and buy something, even if I don't need it, because I just want to be uplifted by his inspirational message. Now, I tell you what, that gives me chills just thinking about it. Gives me the goosebumps just thinking about that. If you, after all the years that you've been working and that you've been in the world, if you can't come up with some way to add value, when a 19-year-old can come up with a way to add value, you know, to me, that's what being celebrated is about. He became a celebrity not because he went out and did some crazy stuff and got himself on the TMZ in video, but because he went home and said, how can I make this a better experience for the people I serve? You know, and there are a couple of things you said I want to really make mention. One is the idea of your story. And this has become now very popular for people to talk about their story. But I want to help people to make a distinction between telling a story that actually bores people, you know, and you go on and on and on about your story when it has nothing of value for the other person, as compared to telling a story that really speaks to me as a listener. And you've been among the best I've known at telling stories, because obviously you've got so many of them. And so is there any piece of wisdom that you would be able to give about how do you frame your story in such a way where it actually is of interest to the party listening, and it doesn't go rambling on talking about how you were born in, you know, New York and you were raised, that kind of thing, and before you know it, people are asleep. Very important, because, you know, there's a lot of people talking, not only are we in the celebrity age, but we're in the, you know, short attention age. And if you can't keep my attention for 30 seconds, you're certainly not going to keep my attention for 30 minutes. Do you have any insights or any suggestions as to how people can better frame their story?
I do, and I have to actually give credit to a cranky old antique dealer named Fred that I came across, it's got to be 30 years ago, and I was talking to Fred in his store about something that happened. This old coot interrupted me in the middle of what I thought was this very involved, exciting story, and he said, "Listen, Sonny, just because it happened to you doesn't make it interesting. When it happens to me, when it happens to me, it's interesting." And I never, ever forgot that. When I do speaker training, I drill that into people's brain. Just because it happened to you doesn't make it interesting. Now, with my Brooklyn Bridge story, it's a fun story, but I keep relating how it can happen to the people that I'm talking to and how it can happen to the audience and how it was a fun story, and I really work on the images that they get that, yes, you can hit the lottery. You can buy a lottery ticket, or you can create the lottery ticket. You can create the winning lottery ticket by trying and trying and trying and trying. We were talking about my Brooklyn Bridge thing a while back. And Mitch, before we started this call, I showed you what I'm doing now. In 1983, you probably all know that I sold the Brooklyn Bridge, became famous, made a lot of money and everything else. So that was 1983. This is now 25 years later. The Brooklyn Bridge story is not dead. In fact, it's very much alive because I've created a 25th edition of the Brooklyn Bridge certificate. I had them printed on silver stock, silver paper. I'm limiting the edition to 2,500, and they're being sold for $497, and I expect them to sell out very, very quickly. So this ties a lot of things together. This ties in the idea of telling a story that will tie into people's lives, give them hope, give them an idea that, you know, I was one of you, and I just kept trying things, and it worked. It also ties into the idea of taking action and sticking with something. In 1983, I could have sent out a press release, gotten a bunch of publicity about my Brooklyn Bridge thing, and the story would have been over. Well, I would have left a lot of money and a lot of opportunity on the table. So to focus in on the question, keep in mind, because it happened to you doesn't make it interesting, and even if it is interesting, I doubt whatever happened is interesting for more than 5 or 10 minutes. So you've got to get it focused down to just a few minutes.
Yeah, that's great advice. And just for those of you who are listening, this conversation today is being sponsored by Aunt Mary's Doghouse. And you can go to AuntMary'sDoghouse.com if you would like to make a donation and contribute to Paul's wonderful work. Also, for those of you who are not familiar with my work, we're also inviting you to download the Rainmakers Manifesto, and that's at therainmakersroundtable.com, and you can put your name in there, and you can download that and listen to another conversation where we talk about the importance of making rain. And, of course, Chapter 10 in my book, The New Game of Business, is about new money, and the theme of that chapter is profit is everybody's business. And you said a few things, Paul, here today that I want to make sure people get clear. You did not bounce from business to business, opportunity to opportunity. We're in an age now where it's become very difficult to stay focused on any one core offering for any length of time. And I know I'm as guilty of this as anybody. It's easy for me to be distracted, go off on another journey, so to speak, grab the next best product. And I feel like it's created a real challenge for people, because rather than finding something that you're good at and sticking with it through thick and thin, yet being adaptable, most of us are playing the opportunity game. And although opportunities are something to take advantage of, it's very different to go from opportunity to opportunity to opportunity, unless you're an opportunist and you really happen to be good at that. And so I want to kind of come back a little bit. When I talked about, or I asked you about the video, you know, you did a couple of things that I thought were really brilliant. You made copies of that video that you did at my seminar back in 94, mm-hmm. and you sent out that video to, you know, dozens if not hundreds of people. You got even to the point where you were giving away that video.
Right.
And you really, really leverage that. And with all of the different products and services that you've gotten into since then, you've never lost sight of your bread and butter and your core business.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the principles or one of the questions I ask in the new game is, are you a jockey or are you a horse? Meaning, are you the rider or are you the ride? So, for example, if you are somebody who creates a product, manufactures a product, and you're the producer of a product and other people sell that product, you're a horse, meaning people ride you or your product or service into the money. If you're somebody who doesn't create a product or service, but you use somebody else's product or service, or you work for a company, you're a jockey, meaning you're not the manufacturer, creator, producer, but you're riding that particular product or service line into the money, either as a job or as a salesperson or as a marketer, all right? Now, some of us are jockey and horse, but most of us tend to be better at one or the other. You have been both, jockey and horse, right? But what I noticed over the years is you never lost sight of your core business. And it was only until you really had your core business going well that you then began to branch out and started to actually jockey other people's products. What advice do you have? What wisdom can you share about the importance of sticking to the knitting, so to speak, and having a core offering that you can look at over 5, 10, 15, 20 years, as opposed to bouncing from opportunity to opportunity to opportunity and never really bringing anything into fruition?
Yeah. That's a good question, because the answer sounds like it should be simple. And I've got to give Dan Kennedy credit for a saying that I love. So many people fail because they want simple answers to complicated situations. I wish there was a brilliant thing I could say that would solve the problem that so many people, that in my mind, 98% of the people have, and that is that idea of focusing. You all have heard of Winston Churchill's famous speech that everybody just worships as a god, you know, never, 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 never give up. I think those are the most foolish words ever spoken by someone in a leadership position. You better know when to give up. That's part of the idea of success. Understand that your idea is not working. My Brooklyn Bridge idea was probably my 1137th idea, but I knew that the others weren't working, and I focused. I think it was one of my December blog posts, I mentioned that I had spent something like $11,000 or $15,000 or $17,000 or whatever it was on other people's products. And Mitch and I were talking about this before the teleseminar. What I didn't mention, and this was a disservice, and I'm sorry I left this out. What I didn't mention is I spent the money on other people's products, educational products for me, and then I immediately put them into action. We get right back to the action word. What's the secret to doing that? The secret to doing that is to pick just one thing. Pick one tape. Pick one half hour of a day. And let's say you pick, I do this every morning, and I write about this a lot. I have a little CD player right next to my bed, and every night before I go to bed, I put a new CD in. It could be motivational, it could be marketing, it could be anything. But I know that the minute my eyes open, I hit the play button, and I listen to as much of that CD as I have time for, a minimum of half an hour. That's the way you start with this focusing idea. What you've got to do is resist the drug addiction that so many people have, and that drug addiction is falling prey to a lot of these the hype out there. You got to buy my product or you'll never be successful. So you buy 16 different products and they all sit on the shelf. You've heard this all over and over again. There's no way to easily get off heroin, cocaine, or the addiction to buying information products. You got to go cold turkey. You got to work on it. You got to listen to that one CD every morning between 6:30 and 7. You've got to do it. You did it in school. When you went to school, you had to be there at 7:30 a.m. If you were late and the bell went off, there were penalties to pay. Why aren't you doing this in your life? Why aren't you treating your life like school? You have to do this at 7:30. If you don't, what is the penalty? You put $5 in a jar, and at the end of every week, you donate that $5 to charity, or whatever the penalty is. I know when I do dog training, people, there are two ways to do dog training, reward and consequences, not punishment, consequences. Reward is good if you want the dog to give you a paw, roll over, you know, sit on your back, that's fine. Consequences is good when they're doing a negative behavior. For folks who are addicted to buying information products and not taking action, who are addicted to putting up barriers, you cannot use the reward system. You've got to use the consequences system of correcting that behavior. And by that I mean the reward behavior would be buy another information product. Well, that's not working. The consequences is I bought this information product. I now am going to make a schedule for 30 minutes every day for the next 7 days. I'm going to listen to the CDs that came in this information package. If I skip even one, this is the consequence. I have to blank. And it's not put a dime in the jar or something. $5. I have to go mow my neighbor's lawn. You got to do that. And you've got to break that addiction that you have. Once you break the addiction, you can start to focus in on the end view. I mentioned earlier my spiritual views of my discussion with God. You're going to have that same discussion. For the vast majority of people, God's going to say, what did you do? And the vast majority of people are going to say, I didn't do it. And he's going to say, that's your fault. Everything was there. You weren't even able to focus for 10 minutes on this book that you bought. That is one of the most important things I can say to you. Stop this addiction. Start to focus. Start small. Listen to a CD for 10 minutes a day for 5 days, and then 20 minutes a day, but set that time aside. When I run teleseminars, people all the time are saying, I have other things to do. Can you record it for me? And my answer is always the same. No. This teleseminar is so important. You stop what you're doing and get on the teleseminar. Because I find out what they were doing was they wanted to watch a football game. They wanted to go to the movies with their friends. Okay, do that. But then you don't qualify. You can no longer complain that you're not where you want to be in your life. I'm thrilled with where I am in my life. Plus, I go to the movies with my friends, and I do all that other, watch the football games and everything else. But you need that discipline, and the only way to get it is to start small, practice, and then build up. And Mitch, by the way, something you mentioned earlier, I agree with you with that DVD, The Secret. I'm not a big fan of it. I like it. It's got some good points in there. But the overall message is, just think about it, and it will appear. No, it won't. It will not. And the example I always give in my talks is, the most poignant example I can think of is, I was giving a talk once, and I got a call from Mary. We had just taken in a 3-month-old puppy who had been thrown out a third-floor window and had a broken leg. No one was going to pay for that dog's surgery, and it needed expensive surgery, so they were going to put the dog down. We took the dog in, and we paid for the surgery. I could have sat next to that dog and beamed white light, chanted, ohmed, gone over affirmations with that dog. Nothing would have happened to his leg. When I wrote out a check for $1,000, all his problems disappeared. So am I saying you shouldn't think positive thoughts, you shouldn't use affirmations? Go right ahead. I don't have any problem with that. But if you think that is what's going to change your life, you're living with Tinkerbell. It's not going to happen.
And if anybody was offended by the truth, this is the wrong call for them.
And my people know that already. Mitch, I forgot. Your people are on this phone, too. My people already know.
Everybody who knows you and knows me knows that we're all about speaking our truth. And, you know, I think that's really one of the challenges that most of us face. I grew up the youngest of 8 kids, you know, so I didn't do much talking until they were all out of the house. But it's not easy to speak your truth when you have the apprehension or the fear or the worry that somebody's going to not like you for it. And so I've had to really wrestle with that gremlin my whole life. because I was brought up in a family where, you know, you don't want to offend anybody, and you don't want to be an unwelcome guest, and you don't want to be an intrusion, and all of those things, those both explicit and implicit subliminal messages that we get, all of that stuff affects how we, particularly how we market and sell ourselves. And so, you know, you mentioned Dan Kennedy, obviously a fan of both of ours, and we're fans of his too. And I think he says something like, if you're not offending somebody every day, then you're really not doing much.
Right.
You know, and so although I never advocate going out of your way to offend anybody, because there's no need to, the point being, a couple of things. You said that the focus is more like a discipline. You know, the idea that, I don't know what, 20 years ago, you're from the medical community.
Right.
20, 25, 30 years ago, there was no such thing as ADD.
Right.
That seems like that's only occurred over the past 10, 15 years, where now everybody says they've, you know, they've got ADD and it's now the medical solutions. When in truth, what I think it really comes down to in a lot of cases is we're so distracted away from who we really are by all the messages that we're getting from the outside saying who we should be, that we've kind of lost, you know, our own sense of self. I use one of the analogies I use in a book I'm going to finish this year for sure called The New Game, A Playbook for Business, Money, and Life, which is really essentially what this conversation is built on, is that you've got to chip away all the marble that you've built up over the years to find your David inside. I call it the Michelangelo effect. That I know for me, it's been a lifelong journey to try to chip away all the stuff that's not me to actually find out who I really am, what is it that I can bring to the world, to speak my truth without worrying about what other people say. You know, and all of these things, these gremlins rear their ugly heads always at the wrong time. So I think one of the things you pointed out is a slight distinction I want to make. Maybe I'm not accurate here, but I'm going to interpret it this way, and that is the difference between just focus and discipline. Discipline comes from the word disciple, which is to essentially be a student of. And so when you think of discipline, I know I think of discipline because my dad was a New York City cop. I think of, you know, discipline in the authoritarian military style discipline, and I don't like that. It's the last thing I want. But that's not the only kind of discipline. Discipline is being a disciple of whatever it is, whatever path you're on. So why I feel today in the new game it's so important to do something that you enjoy doing, or at least love what you do until you do what you love, because you'll want to be a disciple. You'll want to be disciplined to do something you love to do. My son Adam is 19 now, and he breakdances every day. He loves to breakdance. And if there's a day that goes by that he doesn't breakdance, he isn't dancing or teaching dancing, he feels like he's not complete. Now, try to get him to clean up his room. Okay? Forget about it. You know, or try to get him to get up, you know, every day on time for something. Forget about it. But when it comes to his dancing, not only is he there on time every time, but he's there early and he stays late. You know? Now, as a parent, I look at that and I say, well, geez, you know, he's not in college and I could worry about it. And I could think he's not getting an education, he's not going to have all the advantages, and yet I actually feel just the opposite. I feel that he's been blessed to find a discipline, something that he's a disciple of, that he likes enough and loves enough to do it, not because somebody says you have to do it, but because it's almost like part of him every day.
So, Mitch, if I can interrupt you right now, I think you are coming up with this great example that in 60 seconds, again, we did not rehearse this. So, Adam loves to break dance. So let's say you go with Adam with your little flip camera that costs $130 or something, and on camera, you say, Adam, just show me five little moves. And you videotape five little moves. And you say, okay, Adam, for the next hour, just walk me through how I would start breakdancing. And for an hour, you record him from step number one all the way to your breakdancing an hour later. And then that night, you put up a simple little web page. You put five little clips on where he's showing you five breakdancing tips. And he says, for $19, you can download this hour long video on how to actually start breakdancing. Real simple. He took his passion, he focused, created a product. That night, he's in business making money.
There you go. That was worth the whole hour we spent right there. That was great. And you know, but you see, that kind of flies in the face, though, of a lot of what we hear from the outside again, you know, living from the outside in versus the inside out, that says, you know, if you want to be successful, do what the successful people do. Do it my way. Do it this way. Do it that way. And we go so far off track in many cases that we forget who we really are. We forget what our strengths are. I'm coming back to the core principles of the new game. Do what you do well better. Do what you do well better, as opposed to trying to become good at everything. You know, when you get into the internet, you want to be an internet copywriter, you want to be an internet marketer, you want to do this, you want to do that. So you diffuse all of your energy to try to strengthen your weaknesses, so to speak, and in the process of strengthening your weaknesses, you weaken your strengths. And so part of this thread that we're talking about here comes back to, would you agree that everybody really ought to have a core offering that has 5, 10, 15-year potential, and whatever they have to do as far as that core offering is concerned, to stick with at least that core offering? Would you say that that's good advice, or would you say that that's old game advice?
Well, not only is it good advice, it's true. You said do what you do well and get better at it, and then I'm going to add, and then monetize it. Another example I give when I give talks is, to me, almost an extremely ridiculous example. Let's say that your passion, what you are great at, is crocheting little chickens. That's all. And you say, how am I going to do anything with it? How can I become a celebrity chicken crocheter? Well, you've already set up a huge barrier. Of course you can become a celebrity chicken crocheter just by going into the media and doing interviews. I could guarantee that. But how could you monetize that? Well, you can put together a little video on how to crochet chickens. Well, a lot of people want to know how to do that. And then you take it a little further. Monetize that. How to crochet chickens and sell them on eBay. Great. How to sell your crochet chickens on eBay and start a dog rescue organization, using a personal example. Crocheting chickens. Come on. Everybody on this call, everybody listening, has a talent, ability, or skill that you are either denying or you're monetizing. If you're not monetizing it, you are denying that skill. I don't care what the skill is. Now, Dan Kennedy gets a little sarcastic, but he's true. You know, he said his skill is he wants to monetize, I think he says, sleeping in a hammock, drinking a beer or something. Yeah, I understand that. But everybody listening has some talent, some skill, some ability, some hobby, some pastime, some whatever that you are good at, you can become a celebrity at, and you can monetize it. The end to this discussion, by the way, don't expect any sales pitch for a product. We're not going to be selling product. We're doing this because Mitch and I are both passionate about helping you succeed. That's what this is about. So if you're getting nervous, by the way, put your credit cards away.
Well, actually, you know, but I did want to do though, because I really want to do as much as I can to help you and to help the dogs, because that is something we're both passionate about. You do have a sale going on, and all the proceeds of the sale of all your products and services are going to Aunt Mary's Dog House. So even though we're not pitching anything, but if you care to get some really great products and services at a steep discount. Why don't you just go ahead and give them the URL, the website, so if they want, they can go and make a contribution and get some good value in return.
Right. So I will modify what we're not making a sales pitch for anything. What I do once a year, once every 2 years, I clear my shelves of really quality information products that they're either mine or products that I've purchased or they were sent to me by the people who produced them. And I drop the price way down, and then I take the money and I donate all the money to various animal welfare groups. And right now the sale is on. The link to go to the sale is Hartunian.com, Hartunian, Hartunian.com/sale, S-A-L-E, small letters, S-A-L-E, Hartunian.com/sale, all the money, less the shipping, of course, you know, I pay for shipping, but the money or the sale of the product, 100%, is going to be donated. My goal is to get $20,000 that I can donate to these groups. And everybody benefits. You get some great information products, big discount, and the welfare, the social welfare, the animal welfare groups get money, and I get some more credit for my final discussion with God.
And we definitely want to run up the chips on that one, don't we?
No doubt about that.
That's great. So it's Hartunian.com/sale.
Right.
That's great. So, we've covered, you know, we could go on for hours. I think we're going to have to at some point because this is getting into some stuff that's really fun and really different and the kind of conversation I think that people don't exactly have every single day. But, you know, I do want to mention something. We're actually a little bit over our time. We're going to go about another 10 minutes, so if you're still with us, hang in there. But I wanted to say something about this whole issue of selling, because this is really something that I feel like people don't quite grasp. There's this a distaste almost for selling, all right? And let's face it, the truth of the matter is marketing is an expense. Unless you're doing PR and you're following Paul's formula in the $1 million publicity kit, most of the time marketing is an expense. And you need to sell to be able to recoup your expensive marketing. You need to sell to have a profit on the investment you make in marketing. And you need to sell so that you have enough money left over to be able to service the people who become customers and clients of yours. All right? So I want to take just a couple of minutes and talk about this whole issue of selling, because most of us, because we don't like to be sold to, when I do seminars, I used to do seminars, a lot of them on sales back in the 90s, and I'd always ask this question, ask everybody to raise their hand, how many people like to be sold to? And very few people would put their hands up. And then I'd say, how many people would like to buy? And everybody puts their hands up, okay? Now, it's self-evident, yet we don't make this connection. And I ask this question, if you are reluctant to be sold to, is that in some small or large way affecting your ability to sell to others? Very important question, because truthfully, if you are a horse and you're in business for yourself, and even if you're a jockey on a horse and you're riding yourself, or if you're a jockey and you're riding somebody else's horse, if there ain't no sales, there ain't no revenue, there ain't no work. And so from my perspective, I don't know of a more underdeveloped and important ability, success ability, than sales ability, all right? Because you could be a great marketer, but marketing, unless it's the marketing that does convert, and you happen to be a great copywriter, let's say, where your marketing actually doesn't just market, but it actually also does the conversion, probably, my guess is that for most of us, we have to sell, and we either have to sell face-to-face, on the phone. In other words, there's going to be a human connection. And my observation over 30 years is that sales ability is the most underdeveloped yet untapped vast resource. Talk a little bit, Paul, about what your take is on the whole selling thing versus marketing, because you've been very, very successful at selling from the platform. You've really been successful with selling in every business. any tips, any clues or cues that you want to offer people?
Yes. And I'm real strong on this. And when I do the speaker training, I spend a good amount of time talking about what most people know of as the close, how you close the sale, how you get whatever it is sold. The thing that people misinterpret is that they will have to do a sales pitch and convince the people, the audience, the people across from them, the client, whoever, they will have to convince someone to buy what they're selling. That's dead wrong. That's why people hate selling. That's why they're bad at it. If you've heard me speak, you know I don't sell anything. What I actually do is provide such an abundance, just an avalanche of proof that what I am talking about is true, is effective, and is the way to go, that the audience convinces themselves. They sit there and say, this guy's proving every single thing he says. He shows me step by step how this is going to help me. That when the customer convinces himself or herself, that is great selling. And that's very, very comfortable. If you believe in your product and you know it's going to help the person, don't try to sell the product to them. Give them an abundance of proof that what you are saying is true and effective. They will convince themselves. It will be a much easier sale. Your refunds will be dramatically lower. Your customer service problems will be much lower, and your testimonials will be glowing.
Very important. Yeah, and I observe that a lot of times when you listen to yourself, everybody should record themselves. The most valuable investment I ever made 15 years ago, I bought a Marantz cassette recorder. And I began to record every single talk I gave, whether I wanted to keep it or not. I recorded a whole lot of my sales presentations. And it was one of the most valuable things. You know, it's very hard to listen to yourself. Even those of us who are speakers, very sometimes hard to watch yourself, hard to listen to yourself because you're hypercritical. But yet it's so important and so valuable because if you don't know how you're coming off to other people, most of us are unconscious to the way we communicate. And so if you find yourself in the pitch mode, you know, where you're talking so much about your product and your service, and your chances are good, better than 50-50, I would even go so far as to say probably 80 to 90% of the time, people will not buy from you when you're doing all the talking. Most of the time, people are going to buy something when they're having an internal dialogue with you, with themselves, and where that proof comes in is validation that what you promised, you can deliver. But in truth, people aren't sold. You may think that's the process, but in truth, most people are buying what they want, not what they need. They're buying what they want because the environment, the circumstances, and the context of the conversation are creating that opportunity for them to say yes. And so I would recommend that you not only record all your presentations, or at least enough of them, but be very observant outside of the Internet, which is still a little bit in the old game in terms of one-way communication, although that's changing. Observe the percentage of time that you spend talking and that you spend listening. And if you're in a live situation, a face-to-face on the phone or in anything other than a technological conversation, if you're talking more than 50% of the time, you're dramatically affecting your chances of making a sale. I'm not talking about from the platform where you're the keynote speaker. So I'm talking about in a traditional conversation. That's one of the quickest ways for you to modify and adjust the way that you approach people, because I've observed that a lot of people, when they get very excited about the products and service, it's not passion, it's love. And love is blind. You know, passion is great, but love can be blind. And so when you find yourself in that situation, if you are extolling the virtues of your product, if you're pitching, if you're presenting, you're not necessarily giving people an opportunity to talk themselves into owning what you have. So a couple of things you said I think are really important, especially the proof and especially allowing people to buy in as opposed to being sold. And that will actually help you as a seller to be more comfortable with the process of selling, because if you can get very comfortable with helping people buy. I use this analogy. I say that, again, you're in the transportation business, and your product or service is a vehicle that's going to help people get from where they are to where they want to be. So the question becomes, where do they want to be? How quickly do they want to get there? And do you have, if not the best vehicle, do you have adequate transportation to get them there? And to me, those are some of the most important critical things of how you overcome that reluctance. And, of course, you know, to become really good at your communication skills, I don't know if there's anything more important in life than becoming really communicable, if you will, not as like a disease or a virus, but in terms of your ability to speak with people. So do what you can to hone on your sales ability. And we actually have a great audio that you probably want to listen to. There's no charge for it. If you go to my blog at playthenewgame.com and you go in there and look for the $1 billion sales secrets, all right, you can download a one-hour audio where we talk about how you literally change the game of how you sell so that you can become really comfortable with the process of helping people buy as opposed to trying to convince them.
Mitch, say that again. I'm sure I didn't get that. So say that web address again.
It's playthenewgame.com, which is my blog. And, there should be one that's called Billion Dollar Secrets. If it's not there, it'll be up in the next 24 hours. So if you don't see it there, all you have to do is go to the main page and scroll down, and you'll see a blog entry post for Billion Dollar Sales Secrets. This is just a great audio conversation we had about how do you sell, but how do you sell to the right people at the right time who are open and eager to hear what you have to say. I call these people hungry fish. You know, we spend so much time trying to convert the heathens that we don't even realize that there's pools and pools and pools of schools of hungry fish. And the single most important question in any marketing or sales endeavor is who. Who am I really best suited to serve? And once you find where those schools of fish are swimming, it becomes much easier for you to drop the line and catch the hungry fish as opposed to trying to convert the heathen. So go to the playthenewgame.com. That's the main site. Scroll down. You'll probably have to go down half the page. You'll see $1 billion sales secrets. There's an MP3 you can download.
And talk about hungry fish, Mitch. Mary's whipping up dinner for us, and these fish are getting hungry, and I'll bet you there are some people listening who are getting hungry, and we ought to start wrapping up.
We are going to wrap up, and we didn't have a chance to take your questions, and I apologize for that, but we just kind of got on a roll. But I want to invite you to send your questions anyway, because this conversation is just the beginning. Although Paul won't be with me tomorrow, I've decided that every day, Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, we're going to have a conversation like this, where I'm going to have a chance to either interview somebody who I respect and I admire, who I believe has value to offer, or I'm going to share some interesting facts or some models or success stories. So even if you didn't have a chance to listen into this, if you're getting this on tape or on replay, every day at 4, Monday through Thursday, you can tune in to the very same phone number, 712-580-1100. And the PIN code is 12288#. And we'll do a lot more interaction. If you have a question or if you have something that you want to share as a result of this, please feel free to send it to question@thenewgame.com. And not only will we respond to you, but we might actually offer it and answer that question in future conversation. So, Paul, first off, let me just say thank you. Thank you for being in my life, for being my friend for so long, for being a person who I've always felt a kinship to. I want to wish you a very, very happy birthday, and you look great for 39, I got to tell you. And And just one more time, so people can make that donation, why don't you go ahead and we'll give you all the URLs, all the websites where you can get information. AuntMarysDoghouse.com is one. And the other one was what? Give that sale website again.
Hartunian.com/sale, HARTUNIAN.com/sale. And before we go, whenever you'd like me to, I just want to wrap up with a couple of last comments, Mitch.
By all means, feel free. Go ahead.
This is a good time. I want to wrap up just by saying that one of the biggest enemies to success, to a successful life, to a life that you want, that you're hoping to have, that you're dreaming about, or that you're living now, is cynicism. There were a lot of people who did not join this call because they were cynical. They thought we were going to try to sell them something. There are some people who are on this call right now, or maybe listening to this recording, who are still cynical, saying, oh, there must be some ulterior motive these guys have. That's going to destroy you. That is absolutely going to destroy you. I understand why a lot of people are cynical. They've been sold a bill of goods. They've been promised a whole pile of things that didn't materialize. What I recommend to you is when you see a product that you think will help you, number one, be absolutely certain it's from a reputable person. How do you find that out? Well, the names are all over the place. Just ask on any discussion board, is this person reputable? Do you know this person? Number two, make sure it has a guarantee. Number three, when you get it, in fact, before you get it, set out an action plan where, as I mentioned earlier, you are locked into action every single day to get through that product. Number four, if the product does not perform the way it was promised, or if you cannot make it perform the way that you should or it should, return it. Return it. And then try something else. And number five, when you find someone who provides you with products that you can put into action, that do what they say, that get the support that they're supposed to get, stick with that person's plan. They have done so much work for you. They have done, in my case, for example, it took me 19 years to come up with that publicity system. Stick with those people. Stay with their products, stay with their plan, stay with their system, and make it work for you. If you continue to be cynical, I can describe your life pretty clearly. I can probably even describe the car that you drive, and I can describe your future, and none of it is good. When you give up the cynicism and you take responsibility for what you're doing and for using these products, returning the ones that are misrepresented or just are not working, and working the ones that are working, I can also describe your life. And it's pretty good news. And that is the whole formula to success. If you're hoping for some magic pill that you've always heard about, it's not going to happen. It takes work, and the work gives you the rewards. The rewards are worth every second of the work you're going to do. So I hope you've enjoyed this call. Again, if you're looking for a sales pitch or something else from ulterior motive, you're not going to find it. We want you to succeed. And when Mitch says he wants you to send him questions, he's telling you the truth. He wants to do whatever he can, and I want to do whatever I can to help you succeed. That's it for me, Mitch.
Well, thank you, Paul. And my last comment before I open up the lines and just give everybody a chance to say happy birthday to you is if you've enjoyed this, or even if you didn't enjoy it for that matter, that's okay. I would love to get your comments. Please go to playthenewgame.com, the blog. You'll see a post about today's conversation. Please comment on it. Give us any kind of constructive feedback, anything you'd like to say. Keep it civil, of course. And so before I open up for everybody to give us a warm goodbye and a happy birthday to Paul, I want to leave you with a quote by Richard Bach, one of my favorite authors, who said, "You are never given a dream without also being given the opportunity to make it true."
That's great.
You may have to work for it, however. And most opportunity comes disguised as a little bit of hard work. Nobody ever died from hard work. So I want to encourage you to stick with your dream, hang in there, and realize that you're never given a dream without also being given the opportunity to make it come true. So thank you all for being and I would like you guys, if you're still with us, to give us one happy birthday, Paul.
Happy birthday, Paul. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful night. And if you're around tomorrow at 4 p.m., I'd love to do it again. So long, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.